We had our senior banquet last night, and this morning, at the first part of next service, we will be honoring our graduates. They'll be receiving their gifts from the elders and the ministers, and they'll be introduced. If you can be a part of that, we would invite you to stay. And this morning, because of that, and because of it being Mother's Day, and by the way, happy Mother's Day, I wanted to speak this morning of mothers, graduates, and us. And you have no idea, well, you may, if you've gotten the outlines, you have an idea of maybe where we're going, but maybe not necessarily. But first of all, let's go to the middle one and let's talk about our graduates. Seniors. You are seniors. And in a few days, or maybe already, this is going to happen. There's something about that picture that to me catches the essence of a senior graduating from high school. You can almost hear them saying, free at last, free at last, free at last. And that's pretty much the idea of these seniors. And I remember that feeling well. And most of us do. And this is probably the thought process or the feeling of our seniors now. But you'll soon be seniors again. And it'll be a little different attitude. It will not be so much free at last, but there is joy. And at the same time, if you look closely into the faces and maybe in the background, there is some kind of concern. Now what? And it's almost like when the responsibility of you and your life hits you. You mean nobody's going to pay for this anymore? You mean I've got to pay for me now? And so the responsibility begins to hit. But you're not done being a senior, because there's one more coming. And you need to be getting ready for that one more coming. And really, much more than it, getting ready for what comes after. Which leads us to us. But before we get to us, happy Mother's Day. I have something I want to read to you. I found it. I thought it would be there, and it was, because everything's on the internet. And I want to read to you some things. What I wanted to find were things that mothers say, and I found them. But this one has a little extra treasure with it, because it is things mothers say, followed by what they really mean. Number one, don't make me come over there. I really don't want to get up or stop what I'm doing to come over there. Number two, because I said so. I can't think of any other reason. Number three, if you don't have anything nice to say anything at all. I'm hoping that you won't come up with anything to say for at least the next 30 seconds. Number four, stop that this instant. If you stop now before I have to get up and come over there, we can forget this ever happened. Number five, don't make me turn this car around. I am totally bluffing. If we turn around now, we'll be going home without any groceries, diapers, or coffee. We need to keep this car en route to its destination, so please, just fall for my bluff, and I'll give you a cookie at the grocery store. Number six, don't forget to say please and thank you. I'm not really sure what I'm going to do if you don't say these things. So please just say them. You will look polite, and I'll look like a good mom, and we all win. Number 7, eat your veggies and you'll grow up to be big and strong. I really don't want to have to admit to your pediatrician that I can't get you to eat your healthy foods. But I also didn't want to have to lie, so please just eat a couple of bites. I'm begging you. I'll give you a cookie. I am the parent and you are the kid. I'm aware that this is super condescending and that you already know who's who around here, but I'm actually just giving myself a pep talk out loud. I'm not really even talking to you. Let's try not to eat off the floor. I don't really care if you eat off the floor. Just don't tell anyone, I'll let you. Number 10. I would never have gotten away with that when I was your age. I don't actually remember ever being your age. But it sounds legit anyway. I'm going to count to 3 and then you better be in your bed. I literally have no energy left. It's the end of the day and I just want us all to go to bed. I'm going to count to 3 very slowly and hope it works, because after that, I've got nothing. Good night. Stay in bed. Please, please, please stay in bed. I'm so tired tonight that I may actually pretend to think you're in bed if you get up to play with the toys. But please, just close your eyes and go to sleep. Please. Last one. I love you. I love you more than you can know. And I really hope I'm doing okay with this mom thing. We can identify with just about all of them, especially that last one. Happy Mother's Day. 2 senses in which it's used. First one is this one, Genesis 3:20. Now the man called his wife's name Eve because she was the mother of all living. Every human being descends from Eve. That is not true of Noah's wife. The 3 sons were from Noah's wife, but there were 3 daughter-in-laws. And there is no indication those 3 daughter-in-laws were the sisters of their husbands, and also being born by Noah's wife. During that day and time, that was not unusual, and it could have happened because all living came from Eve. And so the idea of mother, and she is called Eve because she was the mother of all living, the parent. She is the one through whom all of us have come. And for all of us, she is our original and first mother. The second one has nothing to do with being a parent. And it's used here in Judges 5:7. Villagers in Israel would not fight. They held back until I, Deborah, arose. Until I arose, a mother in Israel. There's no record in the Bible of Deborah having any children. That doesn't mean she didn't. It just simply means there's no record of her having any children. And she's not called a mother because she's a parent. She's not called a mother because she has born children. She's called a mother because of her influence over Israel. And so the word mother in the Bible is used in those 2 senses. It is used in these 2 areas, and I think that's important for us. A lot of times people get depressed at Mother's Day, or ladies get depressed at Mother's Day because they do not have children and have not been able to have children. But the word mother still applies, and it applies in these 2 senses and in these 2 areas. Deborah, She was the wife of Lapidoth. And this is the only time he's ever mentioned in the Bible. There's no indication of any descendants from him. There are none listed. This is the only time that he's mentioned in the Bible. She was a prophetess. She declared God's message. And she passed judgment on those that were in Israel. She was judging or leading Israel. She did this when the people came to her for judgment, when they had difficult problems, when they would have disputes among one another and they didn't know how to solve them or settle them. They would come to Deborah under the palm tree between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim. And under that palm tree, she would advise them or tell them what it was that they needed to do in order to be faithful to God and to manage their problems and difficulties the way that they should. She didn't carry a weapon, and she didn't drive the tent peg through the temple of the enemy of the land to win that victory. All she promised was, "I'll be there with you." And she went and joined that army, not as a soldier and not in fighting, but to be there to give courage and strength to the man who would lead the battle and lead the fight. She had tremendous influence over the children of Israel. It was under her influence and under her encouragement that they threw off the shackles of 20 years of enslavement. And for the next 40 years, they had peace because of this mother of Israel who taught the people, who brought the people back to God, and who encouraged the people to be what God would have them to be. A mother is a parent, and mother is also one caring and guiding her children. And her children may not be the ones who came from her womb. They may be the ones over whom she has influence and over whom she has impact. And the idea used here regarding mother is very close to the idea that Jesus is using the word father. When he talks to the children of Israel, especially the Pharisees, in the passage that was read for us, and I've entitled this section, "Chip Off the Old Block." Jesus said to them, "If you were Abraham's children, you would be doing the works Abraham did. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. This is not what Abraham did. You are doing the works your father did." Those who we allow to have influence over us, those we allow to be the ones who direct our thoughts and our actions, those that we allow to determine what we do in life are really the leaders of our life that we follow. They are our father. They are our mother. And Jesus, in telling the children of Israel this, specifically these Pharisees, "Your father is not Abraham because you don't do a thing Abraham did. Your father is the devil himself because he was a liar from the beginning, and that's exactly who you are. You have no concern for truth and no concern for what is right. And you are of your father, the devil. He is the one who has influence over you." And so who do we allow to have influence over us? And it may be that all of us, whether we've had any children or not, having influence over a number of other people. And if we have influence and if we have impact, then we can be described as father or mother, as the case may be. So what kind of influence? How are we listening? Now we come to us. I can't remember what took me to this passage. I wish I could. It's one of those situations where you're driving in the car and a thought occurs to you. And that thought occurs to you, and it may have been something that was said. I'm usually listening to talk radio, or either that or I have the radio off. And I don't know if the voice was inside my head or if it was coming over the radio, but something was said and it got me thinking down this train of thought. And I eventually came to this passage. And I want you to think with me for a minute. And I want to introduce this passage in this way. If you were given an audience with President Trump, and he called you to the White House, and he said to you, I just want to hear what you have to say. I want to hear what you think is important. I just want to hear from your mind and your thoughts. What would you say? Paul is given that very opportunity. And what he says is something so telling. And even though these words are put together here when Paul talks to Felix, in a way that they're probably not put in exactly this way anywhere else in the Bible, they summarize the things that the Bible repeats over and over and over again. And here is Paul before Felix, the ruler, the man in whose prison he is. And the Apostle Paul has the opportunity to talk with Felix. And he says nothing political. He says nothing about himself. But he says everything. Everything that applies to political. Everything that applies to every aspect of life. And when we look at what Paul says, I want you to be thinking about this. The man who's saying these things, is he doing these things? The man who is giving this message, has he heard the message himself? What he is saying now to Felix, has he already said to himself? And is he saying it to himself every day? And when you look at it from that standpoint, this is one of those passages that separates the Christians from the non-Christians. It's one of those passages that separate the people of God from those that aren't. It's one of those passages that tells us everything the Bible is saying to us. And it sums it up in just a very few words. And here's the passage. Some days later, Felix arrived with Drusilla, his wife, who was a Jewess. And he sent for Paul, and he heard him speak about faith in Christ Jesus. But as he was discussing righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come, Felix became frightened and said, "Go away for the present, and when I find time, I will summon you." He never did, again, as far as we know, to deal with these thoughts. The very next verse, verse 26, will tell us that Felix often called Paul, but he had a reason for calling him. He wanted money from him. Not that he thought Paul had abundance of money himself, but he knew because of what Paul had brought to Jerusalem. Paul knew people who had money, and Paul could raise money. And he wanted Paul to give him money in the form of a bribe, which means he had no interest. Even though these things scared him, and even though these things bothered him, and that's a telling thing, isn't it? That we can understand what God says to the point that it scares us and walk away from it. That we can understand what God says to the point that it troubles us And we don't want to face what we know is coming, but we don't want to think about it. And we don't want to realize it. And so we turn our minds away from it. And that's Felix. But he heard it. He had opportunity to hear it. But he paid no attention to it. So as we go through this, and as we look at this verse again, I don't want you to think so much about, are you saying this to anybody? And that's the thought we all need to consider. But what I want us to think about as we go through this, are you saying these things to yourself? Am I saying these things to myself? And here we go again. Let's take a look. You can sum up everything that Paul is saying by the introduction to it at the end of verse 24. Felix asked him to come and talk. And Paul was happy to do that. And he came and talked about faith in Jesus Christ. What does that mean? What does it mean to have faith in Jesus Christ? To believe he lived? To believe he was the Son of God? This phrase that we use so often. What does it mean to have faith in Jesus Christ? And Paul broke it down for Felix. And so they talked about righteousness. What is righteousness? It's being right. What is being right? Who decides what's right? How do you know if what you're doing is right or not? Righteousness is God. Righteousness is God's will. Righteousness is who God is and what God has said. So righteousness means listening to God. To the point, you can't be wrong if you're doing what God said in the way God said to do it. And to the point, you can't be right if you are ignoring and paying no attention to what God says. Righteousness goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden. Sin, unrighteousness, came into the world when man, Adam and Eve, decided, I know what he said, but this is what I want to do, and this is what I'm doing. And when that decision was made, righteousness left, as far as humanity was concerned. Because righteousness had now been replaced by me and what I want. And I'm certain that that's where Paul goes with this, because it's where the whole Bible goes. Righteousness means listening to God, even if it's not what you want to hear. Righteousness means submitting to God, even if it's not what you want to do. This is righteousness. It is following Him because He's your Creator. And as Paul will get to, then He's the one you're going to stand in front of. And righteousness can now only be yours if God gives it to you. Because you've already lost it. And He gives it to you through Jesus. If you will trust Him and begin to listen to Him. And as a result of this righteousness, a necessary ingredient is controlling myself. Stopping what I want to do and what I feel good about, and making sure I fall in line with what God wants me to do. Which is why Paul would say, I get up every day and I buffet my body and bring it under control. Whose control? God's control. Lest after I have preached to others, I myself would be disqualified when I'm meeting. Self-control It means recognizing I am the servant of my Creator, and so I bring myself under His control, and I stop listening to what I want to do. And then the judgment to come. No matter what power you have, no matter what authority you have, you as an individual person will stand in front of God's throne, and He will either say to you, "Well done," or He will say to you, "I have no idea who you are." And it will all be based on listening to Him and trusting Him and paying attention to Him. I'll tell you a little bit about our seniors. You already know it. I'll tell a little bit about me. I want to tell a little bit about you. I've been privileged for some time now to teach the 11th grade class during the winter quarter. We struggled with the topic for a while, or at least I did. And we would try to go through different topics, and at times they seemed to be pertinent, at times they didn't. The last few years, I've settled on a topic that requires absolutely no forestudy on my part, which I love. But it requires a great deal of study when we get started on the part of all of us. And here's what we do in that 11th grade class. We'll walk in the first day of class as that winter quarter begins, and I will say, "Guys, the class is yours. We'll talk about anything and everything you want to talk about. I don't care what it is. I don't care what the subject is. I don't care if you think it might be embarrassing to me or not. I don't care what it is. We will talk about any subject you want to discuss." Even this year when we had the class, I even let them debate the topics. And I didn't say anything. I just said, "All right, here's the two sides that we're going to look at with regard to this subject." And one of them was instrumental music. Divided the class up into two. You're going to take the part that we can use instrumental music. You're going to take the part that we can't. And let them debate it. And their debate was fantastic. And the amount of effort they put into it on both sides was incredible. And it has been that way now for the last couple of years. Last year, now Dimitri's a senior this year, but Dimitri's class, he and some of his buddies and others raised some questions, and I didn't think we would ever have any more questions than Dimitri raised. But this year's class blew it away. They had so many questions, we had to go through and put them in categories just so we could get through them in the quarter. But it was that kind of thing. I tell you what's sad is to have so many of the seniors never show up, not even for one day of class, throughout the whole quarter. And you think about getting ready, because the whole point of doing this is to try to help them get ready for all of the challenges their faith is about to receive and wherever they go to school. And even if it's a Christian's college, all the challenges their faith is going to receive from their fellow students, but more importantly, from their own personal desires. And those are the challenges that are going to hit. And if we haven't had this talk with ourselves, I walk my life by faith in Christ. That means I strive after righteousness, His righteousness. And to achieve His righteousness, I have to control myself and say no to me. And the reason all that's important is because I'm going to stand in front of Him and I'm going to give an answer for everything I've ever done. mothers and fathers, we have a responsibility to raise this question to ourselves. And then to raise this question to our children. And to the way we raise our children. And to what we are doing. And to the importance we are putting on being right with God and trusting Jesus Christ. That's important for mothers. It's important for fathers. It's important for every single one of us as individuals. And thus the lesson of mothers, of graduates, and of us. Let's raise the question. And let's keep it raised in our minds every day we live. To be what He would have us to be. Do you need to become a Christian this morning? Are you ready to become a Christian? Do you need to come home to Christ? We offer you His invitation as together we stand and as we sing.
No longer to live.